So tonight we're going to be talking about the trip to Cuba, and as the dates mentioned there, we're going to be talking about this recent trip to Cuba. And previous to this trip, I knew very little. I have been to Cuba once. It was just an overnight trip to bring money in to help buy a home there, a house, so the church could meet in the Santa Clara area of Cuba. And then I left. I knew very little, and that was about 4 years ago. And in that four-year period, a lot has happened in Cuba. And there's some things that we need to know, and we'll kind of bring you up to speed on a few things. People have asked, you know, how was your trip? My first comment to most people is, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about how our brothers and sisters live over there. I learned a lot about the church and how things are going for them. I learned a lot about just the daily life of those who are there. And one thing that we need to recognize is that things are different under that government. And there are things that are different that their government requires of them in order for them to operate. And one such thing is that in their minds, every religious group must have a president, so to speak, a leader, a countrywide leader in that country. So if something happens, they go to that individual. And in the case of the church there in Cuba, Emil Perez is that man. And then every province, or what we would call a state, every province there in Cuba also has its leader. And the leader in the province that we were going to was Tony Fernandez. We went into Matanzas, and I'll show you that in a minute. But I'm telling you this up front because in order for us to work in Cuba, you know, we have to have a special type of visa. Now, you can go in on a tourist visa, but you are not allowed to speak in a public manner. You are not allowed to baptize. You're not allowed to do certain things. You're limited if you go in on a tourist visa. You're also limited as to where you can stay. You can only stay in approved hostels and tourist places. And so it limits your mobility. You can also only travel in state-owned or state-run taxi services and things of that nature. So you're very limited on your mobility and things like that. But we're able to go in with a religious visa that allows us to speak, allows us to baptize and teach. It allows us to stay almost anywhere, and allows us to ride in certain places in privately owned cars. And you'll see why that came into play later on. But I want to give you some background here with the church in Cuba. There's a member, as I mentioned before, Tony Fernandez, wrote a book about the history of the church. His family was very involved in the church in the Matanzas area all his life. He said, I grew up in Cuba, and I did not know in his childhood and as he was growing up, he did not know that there were Christians anywhere else in the world. They had zero contact. He had no idea there were Christians anywhere else in the world. And he grew up in Cuba, and his family, and they worked. We'll talk more about this building here in just a moment. But he wrote a book about the history of the church, and I read it while I was there. And he co-authored it with a brother here in the States. But I'm going to give you a super brief Cliff Notes version of the just kind of a timeline as they know it. But as far as the church is concerned, the church came to Cuba through Foreign Christian Missionary Society in the 1800s, and just at the turn of the century. And they worked for those dates there from 1899 to 1917. They established congregations in Havana, Matanzas, and then other areas around there. But they were there for a short period of time. They established a school of preaching for a short period of time. I don't know exactly the details, but they ended up leaving and going to another foreign field. They just pulled out all could get together. They had built big buildings. They had done a lot of work in Matanzas and in Havana and in that area, but they just left. They sold the buildings to the Presbyterians, and actually there's a very large Presbyterian building in Matanzas, in the city of Matanzas, and it says built by the Church of Christ and the date and everything on it, but it was sold to them and they left. And then there were no missionaries coming into Cuba until 1937 when they began to return and come in. And with the help of missionaries or congregations here in the States as far as funds are concerned and helping them be able to afford to live and work over there, they were able to continue working, establishing congregations all over Cuba. At the time of the revolution, which some of you may remember, there were 5,000 members, 100 congregations, and 6 dedicated buildings. Dedicated buildings, that means that the church owned these buildings. They were not just homes, but they were actually buildings at that time. And that comes into play because now it's very difficult, and they're making some inroads. But in order for a church to exist, a congregation to exist, they must buy a house, and somebody must live there. And it's a house church. These 6 dedicated buildings that were there prior to the revolution are able to still be used as church buildings. And they've gone through Matanzas and gone through the paperwork of getting some of these back, some of these buildings. And so it threw things in upheaval for them. It also changed a lot for the church in Cuba. So those who are receiving support, some preachers were able to got out of Cuba, went to Florida, came here to Florida or other parts of the United States. According to their research, a lot of congregations just stopped supporting churches in Cuba altogether because they assumed that any Christians or any preachers that were still in Cuba were communists, and we're not going to support communists. And so one brother sold his Jeep. To have money to travel back to the United States and started riding the circuit and going from congregation to congregation to explain the situation. Hey, we're not, that's just the regime we're under. That is not our practice. That is not what we do. And so he was able to garner some support in getting that, but it was difficult. So at the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, more of us may remember this, at the fall of the Soviet Union, there were 9 congregations with 300 members. So between those 2 time periods, the church had really gone in decline. It was very, very difficult. And by 1994, things were turning around. There were 15 congregations and 600 members. Between 1995 and 1999, 5,500 people were baptized. And seeing how people were able to overcome these things, and 52 new congregations were established. In Matanzas alone, just in the province of Matanzas, there are 52 congregations and 1,200 families, Christians, in the Matanzas area. So it is continuing to grow, and God is doing great works with the church there in Cuba. So I was very encouraged to see what they're doing. One thing they're doing, because right now, as far as food and things of that nature are concerned, it's very, very difficult. It is 1930s food line difficult for the members of the church over there, waiting in line for hours and hours and hours to give what little food the government will dole out. Anything else they need, they have to buy from the money that they're paid by the government. And the government requires that they change that money. They get Cuban pesos, and they have to change it into euros and put it onto a credit card, the government state-run credit card in euros, to buy anything from state-run facilities. And so you can see how you might be losing money after changing hands so much. Things are very, very expensive. And so a lot of times people will sell things on the side. It's called the black market, or they call it the left pocket. If you can't get it from the government, if you can't get it, you have to get it from your left pocket. And so that's kind of code for going. But in doing that, you're paying way, way more, a lot more money for these things. So just to give you an idea, a half a liter of oil in that area was like $12, but that's like almost a third of their income for the month. And so it is very, very difficult. And so in order to answer that and the great need, the churches in Matanzas area purchased land, or with donations were able to purchase land and build a farm. And we'll talk more about that briefly, but that was something that we were working with. So I went down with Gary and Deborah Dull. They live in Mocksville, North Carolina. They're the ones that I've been going up and working with and doing a tent meeting and doing some other things with in the Carolinas. We have some other projects together. So they asked me to come and be a translator. That was my principal job, was to translate for them. And they are great, great people, hard workers. and it was great to be able to work with them and learn a lot with them. If you're not familiar with Cuba, here it is. Here's a picture. And this gives you an idea of where we were and what time frames we were there. So we came into Havana and flew in there on the 28th. And then we went to Matanzas and were there until the 5th. And in Matanzas, in that area, that's where we were going and working out with a farm. And I'll show you some pictures of that in just a moment. And then after being in Matanzas, we traveled to another city, Colón. And after putting this like map on here, I realized, look, this is not English. I'm not sure what language this is, but that's not how you spell Colón in English or Spanish. So I'm not sure what's going on. But it's Colón, C-O-L-O-N, with a little awesome accent mark on the second O. But anyway, so here is where Colón is, and it's a kind of a dusty country town, and you'll see some pictures of it momentarily. But we were there until our last day, and we traveled all the way back to Havana to travel out of there. So like I said, we went into Matanzas, into that region. While we were there, we stayed in government sanctioned hostels. And so it's basically a large house with a room or a few rooms in it that you rent out a room or rent out a little suite, and that's where we stayed while we were there in Matanzas. This might give you an idea of kind of the countryside. This picture is important because this is on our way out to the farm, or the finca, if you want to know the word, out to the farm. And you might look at it and say, Josh, it looks all dusty and smoky. I said, they have not had rain in 8 months. They have not had rain in 8 months. So not only are things difficult just because life is difficult sometimes there, but it's made even more difficult in trying to find things. You can't find milk unless you have a milk cow. So that means you're not finding dairy, you're not finding half and half, you're not finding creamer for your coffee, you're not finding all, like, so you're not finding those things that we would just like, just go to the fridge and get it. You're not getting any of that. No dairy right now. Unless, again, you're getting it from your left pocket and paying a lot more money for it. So it gives you an idea of kind of what it looks like heading out to the farm. And anyway, so we were working on the farm and helped working alongside of them. And they let me borrow their awesome hat. They're like, you need a hat. And I was like, sure, I'll wear that hat. And I look like El Guapo. Anyway, so it was fun. But we basically were out there working alongside them, learning how they work on the farm. As I mentioned before, Gary, I was translating for Gary, and Gary has his degree and background in agriculture and has run nurseries and all kinds of stuff in his life before he was a preacher. And so he was working with them, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But we're out there picking tomatoes and going. How many of you have walked down rows and picked anything before? Some of you are raising your hands. That's awesome. It's really good on your back, right? Get those stretches in there, right? But we worked alongside of them, doing what they can. They were a lot younger than I was, but I wasn't gonna be shown up. So we just kept. I could die later, okay? but what do you notice about those plants? They need water, right? They need water. And you're like, some of them are like, they needed to get the rocks out of that. No, you're not going to get the rocks out. So they plow out there, and you just keep plowing up more rocks. No, there's no pulling the rocks out of the ground out there. But they have several crops that they grow, three principal crops, the tomatoes, and they grow corn, and they grow frijoles, or beans. Those are the main staples that they will grow when they rotate those crops in the fields. They are blessed. This place is blessed in that they have a little creek. They call it a river. It's a creek. But it's a naturally fed, spring-fed creek, and so they always have water to pump. However, the pump was broke. And they were having to rent a pump, and they were paying for it with the sacks of beans that they needed. Because the produce from these fields and what they're doing is these go to the church members. These go to orphanages. So the church in Matanzas, and the church in general in Cuba, has a good relationship with the government. By that is they kept everything on the up and up. They kept everything in front of the government and done everything the government has wanted and asked of them, and they've shown that they've been trustworthy. And because of that, the government has given them, actually, after the government saw for several years that they were doing this and were giving food away, the government gave them more land to cultivate. and to grow more food because they saw what they were doing with it. So the government also allowed them to go into orphanages and old folks' homes and those kind of things that other groups aren't allowed to go into. And so they're able to go in and bring food and bring produce to these places. And so they also grow fruit and other things. They have some milk cows. So several times while we were there in Matanzas, we were going around with them delivering different tomatoes and stuff we'd picked, the milk from the cows and different things, and going around delivering these things to the orphanages. Because we went into one orphanage and they opened up their cupboard, and guess what was in there? Nothing. And we put the food they had in there for that week that we had brought in there for them. And they were getting some other staples too. We weren't the only source, but they had no food in the cupboard. And so the church is providing this. So what does that do for the church? Well, you can only imagine what that does for the church and the name that's goes out and the good works that they're doing there in Matanzas. So this is just to give you an idea, a bean field that needs some water, that we're just giving an idea of kind of the property. They have quite a bit of property there. Here we are kind of hovered around Gary, and I'm translating as he's explaining very technical things that I told him afterwards. So Gary, you did not prepare me for these technical words. But we were basically, he had brought a device that measures the pH and acidity, the acidase, the pH acid levels of the dirt. And so they would know what plants and what areas and how to rotate their crops and be able to test. They were so excited about that, to have that next level of knowledge. They knew how to grow stuff out there in that area. They've been doing it for so long. I'll show you in a minute a picture of Jorge, who grew up doing this. That's all he's ever done. His father, you see him in the khaki standing behind me there? He is 80 something years old. His hands, when you shake his hand, is like, you know, a 30 grit sandpaper. But man, he's a neat guy. He's a really neat guy. He'd work you under the ground. So he was out there with us also working. But that's Jorge's dad. That's all they've ever known. And so not only does Jorge preach, and I'll talk about that in a second, but he also works and helps this on this farm. And so we're kind of huddled around there, him and his workers and stuff, and explaining some things, different things we can do there. We spent a lot of days out there with him, so we were cooked together. Deborah would cook with him, and this is the kitchen. And that chicken is from the United States. That's big, hearty chicken legs. They assume that Americans only eat white meat. Some of you are like, oh yeah, they have assumed correctly. Some of you are like, yes. Because for the United States ships dark meat into Cuba. But guess what they don't ship in? The white meat doesn't get to anybody there. So they assume that all Americans ate it all up before it got there. They're like, I'm sorry, all we have is white meat. It's like, oh, or red meat. We're like, oh, I love red meat. And they're like, oh, really? But anyway, so we were cooking together and we spent time with them. So going on these trips, it's not about like the numbers and all the things you do, and you can't count and you can't quantify just time spent with people and working with them and being around them and encouraging them. You can't quantify that. And that's what Tony was telling us, is that as much as what you do and you're helping and all those things are nice, but we just need people to come and worship with us and be with us. And so that's part of what we were doing. The farm has never had groups come out like this and pick beans beside them. They've never had Americans come out and do that kind of stuff. So it was encouraging to be with them. We learned a lot from them. This building is in the city of Matanzas. So I want to talk just briefly about this. When I talked about the church after 1937, this building was built shortly, or at least the basement level of this was built shortly after 1937. And this next picture you'll see, they worshiped here in this area. It's obviously now a storage room, but that kind of indention area there, that was painted so it can be a blackboard. And this is where they had classes. This is where they worshiped until the early 90s when they built this big area. And that's Tony Fernandez there explaining to me the history of this building. And Wes Broward actually has been involved in helping support the work there at in this particular location. So he's telling me the history of that area. And places he knew as a kid growing up in that area. So that was Saturday, and then this is the Sunday there at Versailles, another congregation there in Matanzas. And we worshiped with them. That is under just, just a tin roof and a bunch of fans and that kind of stuff there. We had, on this particular Sunday and the other couple Sundays that we were in Cologne, they do what's called culto unido, or just unified worship, where all the congregations in the area all come to one place and worship together. And so we did that there, and everybody was together. And Tony was telling me, he said, they encourage people around them. They have what they call basically using your patio to help grow food or raise pigs or do something like that, so you can use what space you have to provide for other people. And so they had to ask the people next door to bathe their pigs before services. How many of you have been around pigs? Don't elbow your husband. How many of you have been around pigs, right? All right, so they get to smelling. So he asked them, would you mind washing your pigs before services? So the family members got up at 4 a.m. and washed their 4 pigs before coming to church. That's not something you have to do on your checklist before coming to church, do you? No, we don't do that. But anyway, it was a blessing to be there. Gary spoke, and I translated for him. And this was just a staged after the fact. We don't get up and take pictures of worship during worship, but this is a stage after to give you an idea of what we were doing while we were there. And then we left. We hurriedly ate and left Matanzas and went and had services in another town in Cologne, translated again. Any guesses as to what that wooden box is there? That's the collection box. It's a little church building, wooden church building. The lid opens up. That's what they use for their collection box. It's interesting, there are a lot of people who are immigrating to the States. A lot of people are immigrating to the States out of Cuba right now. And in many places, you'll have very old people who cannot make the transition to the United States, and you'll have the very young. You also have situations where a lot of preachers are coming to the States. And because of that, most preachers are preaching 5, 6, 7, as many as 9 times a day, riding circuit to other smaller areas around them. And so this particular Sunday, it was another like unified worship together. And so different kind of smaller congregations come in to the central area to worship. But they all consider themselves kind of one congregation because they don't have somebody ministering to them except for Orlando, who is the preacher there. Orlando and his wife, Olaida. They work with the congregation there, and he's riding circuit and going to 4 or 5 different places every Sunday. And so he stays very, very busy. And the members cannot afford to all come together. It's too far distance-wise for them to afford to pay to come in. And so he goes to them in the work. And so here's a couple pictures of us worshiping there. The church just recently purchased this property, and so we're worshiping there in the patio area. There were 3 baptisms that Sunday. Those who decided to put on Christ. Orlando had been studying with them, but that day they decided to put on Christ in baptism, and Gary baptized them. You can see the 3 ladies there. We have some pictures here of their baptisms, but they made that small pool. And we came here like the following Sunday, you know, to baptize somebody kind of after services. And I'll tell you more about that in a minute, but there are a couple boys from the neighborhood that snuck over the fence and got into the pool. So some of you would do that too. I might have done it in my youth, but repented later. So, we spent a lot of time teaching and working with different people. This was just after that following Monday, and meeting with different members and spending time with them, talking, learning a lot, like I said, learning a lot about what's going on there, but also encouraging them and having different classes. We went to and visited many different people on Tuesday. In this town in Cologne, like I said, is a smaller town. You have to travel around. Mostly the average person travels around by horse and buggy. So you pay a couple dollars for them to take you to different places around town, horse and buggy. And so we did that, traveling around different places and visiting members and encouraging them. This guy here was already handicapped, had broken his hip, and so we're visiting him and his recovery. We had a class. I got to teach class on during the day. As much as we can, we have an afternoon class. The members would come together, those that were off work, those that could get together, and we teach about various subjects. This was just on Christian living and basics, things that I need to do for myself as a Christian. And we talked about those with the brethren. We also went out to, this is the town or little area here, Trudis, and we went out, and this is one of the places where, again, this is a house. This is one of the places where Orlando comes out and worships with them. We go out and sing a few songs, and we have some prayers, and then we have a Bible study. And in this particular instance, I translated for Gary as he taught and brought us the lesson at that time. This was actually later on in our trail, but that's another one of the places we went and had classes with. This is Maximo Gomez, actually where Orlando was from, and again, he's coming out here. They now live in Cologne, but he comes out here to work with this group. And one of the ladies was recently baptized, and we're able to talk to them about the nature of the church and some other things, as well as what the nature of faith and what faith is. But there's a guy named Luis who's our chauffeur, and I'll show you a picture of him in a moment. And this is the first time he's been in the Bible studies, and he's listening. But Luis, what he does is he restores cars. So many of you think, when you think Cuba, you think old style cars, which Luis was our chauffeur, and we traveled around in a 1953 Plymouth, is what we traveled around in. You know, he's like very proud of the fact that it's original, you know, original bodywork and everything, but it was a inline four diesel Isuzu motor in it. The motors have long since gone, anyway, so we're talking about the church and what the church is and what it means. And I said, well, I have a friend here, Luis, who knows what original parts are. And we're trying to be the church like the original church. Nothing added to it, nothing man-made, nothing imported from China, right? The original parts when you're trying to restore the church. And so we're trying to, you know, get him to understand that nature of the church in these studies. Gary had a men's Bible study during the one afternoon, and just encouraging the men that could be there. We also had studies in the evenings. This is Orlando, the preacher there on your left, and his wife, Orlida, in the middle, and actually his brother on your far right. Really, really good people, very, very sincere, very, very hard workers. He actually got sick and had to go to the hospital when we were there. He gets spells of dizziness, and he just cannot get out of it. But he's a very, very hard worker. I told him, I said, your body just wants you to stop for a moment so you can rest. He's better now. These two are also were the translators that they'd used in the past, Madeline and Mondesi, and they were translating their English teachers there. In the city, actually, if you're walking around with either one of them, people just walk up to them and say, hey, teacher, hi, teacher. They know everybody. They've taught a lot of people in that town, and so it was a pleasure to work with them. Here's a view from the back seat of a 1953 Plymouth, just in case you didn't know what that was, and our chauffeur, Luis, here he is with the car, you know, with the hood up. So when you get around a car, an old car, you gotta pop the hood, right, and check out what's under the hood. So he's showing us his car, but a very, very sincere guy. At the end of the time there with him, we asked him, how much do we owe you for your gas and everything you've done? He said, whatever you want to pay me, I'm fine with. The rest is for God. And he's not a member of the church. He's close to the kingdom. So it's really cool to see his sincerity. We went back to the farm with Luis, because Luis also is a farmer from way back, all his family. And so we got them together with Jorge to kind of collaborate in getting seeds, sharing resources and that kind of stuff together. So we went out there with them our last Friday before we headed out. And we also got to see them making what they call puré de tomates, or tomato paste. And so all those tomatoes that we'd been picking, they're boiling them down. And then they run them through this machine. And then they boil them again and get them boiled down. So they hand out these bottles of tomato paste to, you know, you can add tomato paste to beans and rice and cook all kinds of different things with tomato paste. And so they're handing it out. A lot of this will go to the orphanages, and they'll go to members of the church. And so they do this periodically, and that's just gives you an idea of some things that they're doing there. Very hot work, but they were doing a good job with it. And this is our last Sunday there in Cologne. Gary preaching and Amanda C. translating. And again, we had three more baptisms there that morning, and they see their baptistry there. And another baptism, but they had three more baptisms there. And then that afternoon, there's a man here who's 86 years old, Jose Martinez. He wanted to be baptized, and he is handicapped, and he did not want to do it in front of everybody, and so we just picked him up that afternoon and came back here and baptized him into Christ. It is never too late. It is never too late. He said he lost his family when he was 37. He had none of his existing relatives. No relatives of his were alive. He was only one left. He said, "All I have is God." And I said, "Now you have a family in Christ." So it was really encouraging. We actually went and the next day. We ended up leaving Tuesday. So we went next the following Monday and just sat with him for a while and talked about his life and talked about things he experienced growing up in that house that we were visiting him in. But just, man, as encouraging as it was to be with him, we got a lot from it. And this, another baptism, Bible study on Monday, and then this lady was baptized into Christ as well. And again, a lot of this is from Orlando and the work he's been doing and studying with these individuals, and then it just kind of clicked while we were there, and they decided to put on Christ in baptism. And so it was a pleasure to work with them at that time. This is the family we stayed with in the hostel. They were really neat people, very genuine, very good people. You see Jorge there with his mask. He wasn't feeling so good, and like his throat was sore from preaching, and so he was wearing a mask. But Raul and his daughter are there, and son-in-law, and they have their glamour shot there in the back. But they are really, really good people. But this is a government-run facility, and we were able. It's basically their home, and they open it up to people to stay in. They cook our breakfast for us, and really, really neat people. And Gary and Deborah stay with them every single time, trying to get them to come to Christ as well. So as we close out with things, maybe this is the Cuba that a lot of people think of, is the beaches and that kind of stuff. But you can see there the people of Cuba are very hardworking, industrious, and the church is growing very well. And I wanted us to read this passage in Acts because the more I was there, the more I thought about this concept with them. All who believed were together and had all things in common and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. And we saw that on a daily basis. We saw that happening. People taking care of other people. And doing what they could. They were taking care of us, and we did our best not to be a burden to them, but they were providing food. They said, "You've come this far. The least we can do is provide this food for you." And you feel so bad that they're doing all that work, waiting in lines for hours to get this food, or paying an exorbitant amount to get a piece of meat to put with the food. And you feel so bad, but they won't let you do anything else. And so you're eating it, and like, "I'll eat as much as I can." Because of what they're trying to do for you. And that was the heart of the people that were there, wanted to serve and wanted to work. And so it was very encouraging to see that. But again, you just see this. When the church does what the church is supposed to do, it looks like the New Testament. That's what it looks like. And so it was just really encouraging to see this. And so they're breaking bread from house to house and doing those things, eating their food and with gladness. They were happy. They were happy. There were members. There was a lady who was 83 years old, walked 20 blocks to come to services every Sunday, and sat on wooden benches, and they sang with joy and were happy. We don't understand, ladies and gentlemen, we don't understand what it is to just be able to worship God, right, and have that freedom to do these things. And because of that, the Lord adds to the church those who are being saved. In that circumstance, even worshiping under the mangoes, which because of the drought, if the wind came up, it was like dodge the mango game because they were starting to fall on you. But even then, even worshiping under the mangoes, you could still worship with joy. You could still worship with heart. It didn't matter the circumstances because you're worshiping God. It wasn't about what you were doing or, you know, the circumstances you were in. You're worshiping God. And so tonight, if you want to have that kind of joy, and if you want to have that kind of relationship with God, you can. Like those that we saw in some of these pictures, you can decide to put on Christ in baptism, having believed that He is the Son of God, confessing His name before men, repenting of your sins, and putting Him on in baptism, and living a life of joy and faithfulness as part of the family of God. Do you have that choice tonight as put before you? Would you make that decision as together we stand and sing?